It is the Shabbat of Yom Kippurim, and I shall be coming back to the slight a change in the title of today, in case you're wondering why that has come forward as slightly different this year. I will be explaining all in a moment. Our Torah portion this morning, Bamidbar numbers 29:7-11. From the Haftarah was Yeshayahu the prophet Isaiah 58:1-14, and from the Messianic writings, the so-called letter of the Hebrews, an open letter to Jews everywhere, effectively, is called, and that was chapter 9, and that was verses 6-15. Traditional portion, obviously, for today, being Yom Kippurim as well. Can I start with something shocking? Today is an absolute tragedy. It is. Today is a totally unnecessary day on the calendar. Probably never thought of it in that way before. Because what we're told always is that this is the highest, holiest day, the day of awe and solemnity and everything that goes around it, and we've seen it as the apex and the pinnacle of every Jewish festival and festival on the Hebrew calendar that there is, and yet it is a tragedy. It is a shame that we should even be here celebrating it. None of us should be here. We should not be here. And deep down, we don't truly want to be here. And by this stage, you're probably thinking, has he completely lost the plot? And do we need to stone him? I have not. Because we are here. And we need to be here. And that's the tragedy of it all. That is the tragedy of today. In the eternal perspective and view of all things, this day, Yom Kippurim, did not stand in the eternal calendar as something important that we must be doing. It was not there in the plan and will of God. There's a reason why today exists. There's a reason why we are here today, keeping this day. And it's come about not because the Lord wanted it, because he did not. This day exists because we made it a necessity. Every single human being that has ever lived brought about this day and its existence. And if the only reason you are here today, or even around the world keeping Yom Kippur, because the Lord has commanded us to keep it and therefore we have to be here to do it, you have completely missed the point. That is not why we are here. That is not what this is all about. This is the day that should not have ever existed. Adam and Chava in the garden would have been shocked at that moment of creation to have seen this day of Yom Kippurim. Because in their innocent, sinless condition, this day simply should not, would not have existed. We made it a necessity. In fact, if the chronology of the day, the chronology of the run-up to the day is to be believed from what we see in commentaries and tradition, this day of Yom Kippur really only comes into existence as a day in terms of a command to meet and to offer sacrifices for atonement directly after the period of the creation of the golden calf. In which case, I would suggest to you that this day is even more serious than we thought it was just because of our sin. Because what that actually connects with also in us, not just as Jews but as human beings, is our propensity to devise our own religious systems, our own way of worshipping the Lord, as in the golden calf. And this Day of Atonement is therefore also meant to remind us of the fact that when God says something, what we go and do is the opposite and do our own thing. You know this is true. We do this. God has given us so much, and yet what has mankind done with what God has given to us? What have we as a nation done with what God has ever given to us? Go back through ancient history with the Northern Kingdom and then later on the Southern Kingdom. We had the Torah, and yet still we fell into the deepest idolatry and sin. Flesh versus spirit, man's way versus God's way, man's religion versus God's true faith and expressions of it. If that links with the golden calf and then links with Yom Kippurim, then our position today is dire. The judgment fall that comes upon us as humanity in this way is that God has shown us what to do and we utterly ignored it and did our own thing. Again and again and again. We make this a necessity this day. It wasn't that the Lord, as it were, thought to himself in his eternal splendor and thought, we need to have this as a festival. No, we made this a necessity for this day to even come about. Now, do you begin to understand what the prophets are forever talking about and going on about when it says that the Lord does not want sacrifice? He doesn't. It should never have been necessary. The killing of animals, the death of his son, should never have been necessary. It would not have been necessary had we not chosen to sin. Every animal that died, we caused that death. When Yeshua died, I caused his death. And we know it's popular for people to blame other people for the death of Yeshua, the Romans, and we know the church then later went on to blame the Jewish people for the death of Yeshua. Absolute rubbish. We caused his death. I did, you did, every human being did. We all caused his death. God doesn't want sacrifice in that way. Shmuel sums it up perfectly. This is first book of Shmuel, chapter 15:22. He says, Has the Lord's great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, stubbornness is an iniquity and idolatry, because you've rejected the word of the Lord, he rejects you from being king. Obedience is better than sacrifice. It would delight the Lord in eternity if you, next Yom Kippur in a year's time, could send me an email and say, I don't need to be there. The Lord would rejoice. I would rejoice. I would ask you what the secret is. This side of eternity, we are not living in perfection. All things have not yet been perfected. We are not yet in that place. Obedience is better than sacrifice. The Lord is not some bloodthirsty deity who looks at blood and wants it shed. He does not. He wants us to obey. He wants us to live out our lives in complete obedience and dedication to him. If we did this, he would rejoice. because the impact on this world would be amazing. The blessing that would come, the change that would happen in this world if we actually walked lives of obedience and did as he says. Just imagine the change that would come about. The sacrifice is needed because of our disobedience. Blood needs to be shed because of our transgressions and sin, our rebellions against God. The price of sin is and was death. It will always be. The price for justice and righteousness' sake had to be paid for sin. It was needed, but God didn't desire it. He didn't. That was not what he wanted. What he wanted from the get-go was that Adam and Chava and their children would walk with him with that closeness of spiritual fellowship and presence and love, knowing his provision and food and warmth and everything. That was God's plan, that he would have creatures whom he could just pour out his love on, and there was no separation, no break in that relationship. That's what he wanted. Not this, the chaos of destruction and hatred and violence of this world was not what he wanted. Sacrifice was not what he wanted, but it becomes necessary because of our sin. It becomes necessary because our God wanted us back in that relationship again. And there is only one way we can come back into that relationship with our Creator, our Maker, and that is through the shedding of blood because of sin. That's the only way that it is possible. The soul of sin shall surely die, and without the shedding of blood there is no atonement, says the Torah. I'm not saying it, the Torah says it. No shedding of blood, no atonement. That's what the Torah says. Sin separating us from God, rebelling against God, moving away, right back at the beginning. You know, things never change, just with mentioning the golden calf. Things never change. Chava looked at the fruit and decided in her own heart that this would be a better way than doing it God's way. Nothing has changed, people. We're still doing this. Every time someone comes up to you and says, oh, it's okay if you put this crystal on that shoulder and you put this crystal on the back of your knee or whatever, you're going to... That's man's way. Forever coming up with rubbish and nonsense instead of doing what God says. Oh, I'll tell you what's happening tomorrow. Look in the papers, it's your horoscope. Rubbish! That's man's way. Nonsense spirituality. Do what God says. Stop inventing things forever and a day to try and fill your life with fake spirituality and everything else in between, and ways to solve problems, wellness, this, that, and the other. Do what God says. He desires obedience. Sin is our problem in all of this. It separated us from God. The thick curtain that hung over the Holy of Holies, with only the high priest going in once a year, a visual representation. When you were up there in the temple worshipping, you could see the curtain. You're thinking, I can't get in. We hung that curtain. We blocked our own path, our own way into the presence of God because of our sin. It's there. You cannot wish it away. It is there. And today is the day of atonement. It's the day when the sacrifices for that sin were brought, when the temple was still standing. The day, once a year, when we bring ourselves back to remind ourselves of why we're even here in the first place, because of our sin. Our sin creating the need for this day. And that it exists still. That it continues to exist shows us a deep reality, whether Gentile or born Jewish, The deep reality is that Yom Kippur is still there every year, and every year we come back round again to do it, and we still need to do it, and that tells us that nobody has yet demonstrated the ability to live a perfect, righteous life before the Lord. That's a fact. And I know I'm preaching to the forgiven here. And I know that you know that we walk in faith, and that righteousness is credited to us. But I'm talking about your walking that walk in daily life. Did you manage it a single moment through the last year? Have you gone through any day in the last year when you got it wrong, when you did sin, and that thought was in your head, and that word was in your mouth, and the act that you did, and you came back and had to repent of it because you just blew it? And we know what that walk is. But even the redeemed people, even the redeemed are here again on Yom Kippur. And if we are, then certainly everyone else should be. But we know what this perfect life looks like. I mean, you've read the Torah. You know. You know the commandments. You know what this looks like. Great minds have studied and commented on these commandments for millennia. And yet, here we are again. We have been taught and taught and taught how to do this, what the commands are and the implications of it and so on. And all of this we have been taught. And we also, as Messianic Jews, are walking in faith and trust. And yet, here we are once more. Knowledge doesn't change you. An encounter with God changes you. Our hope as Messianic Jews, and actually as Jews, should be that this year, in comparison to this time last year, we are holier, more actively righteous in our lives, more dedicated to the Lord, more of the reality of that walk in the Lord should be in our lives. We should be sinning less than we did 12 months ago. That's something only you and the Lord know. But if nothing has changed from a year ago, then I would suggest you've got a problem. And it's one you need to seek the Lord about. But here we are, once more on this day. Shaul masterfully penned the words in Romans 7:24, which really summarizes and, I think, concludes every thought around this on this day, when he wrote, "O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death?" And he knew. I wish I had had the experiences that Shaul had, spiritually and educationally. A man who was thoroughly conversant with the Torah in the way that people today probably aren't, and a man who had a powerful encounter with the Lord and went on to receive revelation after revelation of understanding of the Torah. This is a man who deeply knew the Lord, and he said, "O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death?" He knew the way that sin gets into the body habitually in every which way, and the battles and the struggles that we go through. And it's true, the more you go on, the closer you get to the Lord, the more you realize you're a sinner. So as you get closer to the Lord, that you feel better about yourself. Actually, the closer you get, the more you weep for yourself. The more you realize as you go on, I think in those early years you deal with the superficial sins and issues around, and you think, it's good, I'm making progress. But as you mature spiritually, you're getting closer to the Lord. It's not the superficial stuff you worry about anymore. It's the deep structural stuff you worry about, that you couldn't see before. That you realize that frames you and forms you, and your habits and thinking and expectations and your cultural responses and everything that goes with it. You get before God and you weep because of this, because you realize just how deep this goes. A wretched man that I am. need to be set free of all of this. And that brings us to this day, the inevitability of sin in our lives, and without Mashiach, apparently now no way out. Without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness of sin, there's no atonement, and there is currently no temple standing in Jerusalem. For us who know Mashiach, for us who are the living temple today, there is an atonement for sin. Hallelujah. Thank God that that is true. As we would be lost. All we would have is a vain hope that God will somehow be merciful, despite his own words that there is no atonement without the shedding of blood. All you would have is God's mercy and a hope that somehow your sins will be blotted out. On the basis of what? Our God deals in covenants. He deals on a legal construct and basis with humanity. And if you remove that, as it were, and as aspects of it gone, then on the basis of what do you expect to be forgiven? That God will turn a blind eye to your sin? I tell you, he will not. He will not. Now, I started this section by saying the focus of today is sin. I want to ask your forgiveness. It is not. Laid it on. I've told you what's what. I've told you why we are here. But that actually is not the focus of today. The day in Leviticus 23, today is called Yom Kippurim. Not Yom Kippur. Yom Kippurim is actually the proper biblical name for today. Yom Kippurim, the Day of Atonement. It's not called in the Torah the Day of Sin. Is that odd? But Rabbi, you've just spent half an hour telling us all about sin. Yeah, I have. Because without that, we wouldn't be sitting here today. That's what caused this day. But it doesn't stop there. It's not called the Day of Sin or the Day of Acknowledging Sin. It's called the Day of Atonement. Because sin demands atonement, because that separation and the cost which is involved and so on. His love drives this day to make it possible through atonement that we can come back. In fact, today, the actual focus should be atonement, not sin. Second shock of the day. We need to know what we're looking at. Especially for us as Messianic Jews in all of this. It's atonement that's the focus today. And while the rabbis changed the name of the day to Yom Kippur singular, the biblical focus remains the same, atonement plural. And there are various speculations around this. We don't need to go into too much depth on that level, but I'm sure there's some deeper truth even yet to be discovered around why it's in the plural and not the singular. Personally, I think you've got, with the focus of the sacrifice here, with the two goats, one sacrifice that lives and the other one that dies, there's two sacrifices and yet they're one that's going on, a sacrifice, a living sacrifice. One lives and one dies. And we are fairly sure in our minds where we know that goes. This is the goat that was sent out into the wilderness to take the sin outside the camp. A unique sacrifice. So special, it died and lived. And there's only one other parallel to that. That's Yeshua Mashiachenu. And yet already, when we're thinking about this, the fact that this is the Day of Atonement, we are beginning to see a path where we, as Messianic Jews, could, shall we say, build that alternative scenario, theological construct, an alternative view of this day, drawing from ancient biblical Jewish ideas and thoughts from the Torah directly, that can frame our practice and service today, because if all we focus on today is our sin, we've missed 50% of the message. There is the sin, but it brings about the need for atonement, which is about the need for this day, that we can be set free and come back to the Lord again. So we ask ourselves the question, I suppose, at this point. If atonement, rather than sin, is the focus of today, given that it's even in the name of the day, then why is this day framed by such sadness, solemnity, negativity? The burden of the day, why is it framed in such a way? Now, of course, sin is dreadful. And I suppose on one level that's kind of framed what the day has become because of its focus on sin. But it's almost like the Torah is drawing us beyond sin to say, look, lift up your eyes. This day is not just about sin, it's about atonement. People, atonement is good. Atonement is awesome. God has made a way to deal with this problem of sin. Atonement is the wonderful release from the sin that's been a burden for us all our lives. And sacrifice, as horrific as it is, does actually achieve something in the spiritual and the physical. It brings release and deliverance. It satisfies God's justice and brings about that release from the burden and the guilt and the shame. It's gone. It can go. The Lord can deal with it. Justice and balance are restored. The relationship is healed. Yes, it's a horrific route to get to that point. But then why just focus on the horrific aspects of the day and the sadness and the sin elements of all of this? We get so far in our understanding and then we get caught up with that on the day and forget we've got to push through to the fact that our God can set us free. He has set us free. He brings the atonement. As we said last night at the beginning of the day there, he says, I will provide the sacrifice for you. That's underneath it all, and we strip it bare. Relationships with God are rebuilt, connected afresh. And who wouldn't want to celebrate that fact? In fact, I would put it to you, who wouldn't get a smile on their face at that point? Because that's what this day is all about. And do you know what else I then discovered when I was digging around this for this year? Thought, let's see if we can find some new layers. Peel back that onion skin and see what else is there that we can discover around Yom Kippurim. And I kept stumbling across statements in commentaries that ran something like this. This is my paraphrase, but the content is effectively good. It says, on Yom Kippur, in the ancient practice of Yom Kippur in Israel, it was a day that was hallmarked by joy and celebration and happiness. And I went, what happened then? What happened? What changed? So I read it again, it was there. In ancient Israel, this day was a day of joy, of celebration, because God had forgiven our sins. Atonement had come. We were set free. And we rejoiced because we were set free. And we were happy and glad during the day. It wasn't a day marked with sadness and negativity and solemnity in that sense. It was a day of accepting the seriousness of why we had created this because of our sin. But it didn't stop there. We went on with the joy and the happiness to celebrate our release and atonement. People, we need this. This is a message we need to lay hold of and re-establish back in again into our Jewish practice. As Messianic Jews particularly, we have a reason to celebrate in all of this. And there's another connection, I think, with all of this as well. To take you down a little bit of study and a little bit of the technical stuff on this as well, because it is important, but I think it shows and illustrates something for us as well. Why the Hebrew illustrates this pattern, which I think is worth looking at and analysing. Later tradition, as you know, created a list of the five things to be avoided on Yom Kippur so as to afflict yourself. And we always talk about the makeup aspect, that you're meant to afflict yourself and not the other person. But the affliction aspect of it here, the five things which apparently you need to do to afflict your soul. I thought, well, okay, let's try and find those five things in this one. Can you imagine how long I was looking? Quite some time. Because that list isn't in the Torah. The tradition. It was a later understanding of what afflict your soul meant. Torah's actually silent on this in terms of given definitions. We talk about this a lot, how Torah is silent in all kinds of areas, which is interesting in itself. The Hebrew actually says, V'initem et nafshotechem. And the root initem can mean afflict your soul, afflict yourself in that way. But it also has other meanings too. The various translation of that Hebrew expression is humble oneself. That's actually interesting. Because we've always understood this, we've already read this, and we read it, and we do a lot of things uncritically. We do tend to do that. People do this. We all do it. I do it. But I try to be not uncritical of things. And as I was stumbling across this, I was beginning to think, we're missing something here. There's something else here to be had. The very translation of to afflict your soul is to humble yourself before God. So I started doing a root search through the Hebrew in the scriptures, as you do, to see other examples of this. And it's quite interesting. One example here, when Hagar was told by the angel to go back to Sarah, and apparently, if we take that translation at face value, she should afflict herself before Sarah. And that doesn't even make sense. So I went to the versions. I thought, well, first of all, let's go to the Jewish translation of all of this, and the JPS and everything else. And interestingly enough, it goes back and says the angel told her to go back to Sarah and submit herself to her. What a flick, submit herself. Have a look at the Christian translations. They too run with submit yourself to her. Have a look in the root and the dictionary and everything to try and work this one out. And the translations are equal. They're there as variations. Affliction and submitting yourself to a higher power. Exactly the same word, the same root. Now clearly the angel wasn't telling her to go back and allow Sarah to afflict her in some way. That isn't what was going on, nor did it happen. She was being told rightly to go back and submit herself to Sarah's authority. She had to humble herself to that authority, which is submission. It's a humbling. You can't submit yourself to someone who is greater, more powerful than yourself, if there isn't a humbling of yourself in that process. It is a voluntary humbling to submit. And all of these ideas are contained in this Hebrew word. And then you begin to think, actually, if you look at it in this way, this day of Yom Kippur, the affliction from today, we're commanded to afflict our souls, or shall we say, to humble ourselves today, fits with this overall pattern of what this day is all about. Today is the day of judgment. It's the day when the Lord decrees life or death upon every soul. And we are called to do what? Afflict ourselves, yes, in the meaning of submit ourselves to the Lord's authority to rule and judge and make decrees over us regarding the atonements. We're called to submit ourselves to his lordship, his rulership as judge. That is what we are called to do, to submit in this way. That opens up a whole new dimension of what this day is all about. The day is all about God making a way for that price of sin to be paid. The atonement he has provided for us in and through Yeshua, and truly becoming, as I said last night, our salvation in that process. And the command to us according to the Torah is to submit ourselves to his authority and accept what he is providing for us. And in that way, truly, he becomes our salvation. We're meant to submit to him. And there's one more example of this, which I think is quite interesting. It comes from Deuteronomy 8:3, and it's actually the place where the rabbis got the idea that affliction is all about fasting. In case you are thinking at this moment that I'm arguing against fasting per se, I'm not. There's nothing wrong in the practice of fasting on this day. It certainly is an affliction. And Deuteronomy 8:3 was the passage around this, which was used because of the closeness of the words of affliction and the context here about food, that the decision was made to include fasting as one of the afflictions. Now, it's interesting when you read Deuteronomy 8:3, because the actual context of that is walking in the desert. And this is where, in fact, the translations differ. Because the Jewish versions of the translations in this verse go with that the Lord afflicted us in the desert. Whereas the Christian translations say, and he humbled you in the wilderness. Now that's an interesting, isn't it? You get two very different perspectives. Both translations are correct, by the way. I'm not knocking one or the other. That's not the point. Both are correct. But depending on which one you go for, can bring out a very different feel of what's going on here. In fact, if you think about what's going on here, with being in that desert experience, did God humble us? Or did he afflict us in the wilderness? And the connection is with the manna. The feeding that God brought, the food, the bread, that man cannot live by bread alone. Did that recognition afflict us? Or did it humble us? I think it humbled. When that moment arrives in your life, at whatever point of your life, that you realize that you cannot live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, that the only way you can truly live by faith is following the commandments and the standards that he has brought, the teaching that he has brought to us, that humbles us as human beings, because it says to us, switch this off, stop deciding what is good and right in your own eyes, making up your own religious path, doing it your way, golden calf, fruit on the tree. It's a humbling. Because God is saying to us, you cannot do this. You have to let me bring the atonement for you. You have to let me feed you. You have to be brought down, humbled in this, to bend the knee before the Lord your God and admit that if you don't do this, then you're going to go hungry. You choose to walk that path, but it's a path which humbles us, and it should. It's not just a passage about eating and food and equating it therefore with not eating and being afflicted in that way. I kind of think that almost misses the point. I mean, trust me, I like my food, so not eating today is an affliction. I mean, it is. But that's not kind of what I'm saying. I'm saying, what are we actually meant to be looking at with this affliction in this way? It's a submission to God and the power of his judgment that we, each and every one of us, even today, are found wanting before God. If it were not for Yeshua, if it were not for Mashiach, we would be lost. But we submit to his ruling. We're humbled because of it. Because not only did we bring about this day, we caused this day, we caused Yeshua's death. When we look at it in this way, we are humbled because of who we are, what we have done. And we are humbled because if it was not for him, we would be now lost for all eternity. This carrying of death in us is real. It means something. But he made a way, and it humbles us that it had nothing to do with us and everything to do with him. All of which leads us, in conclusion, to a very famous passage which brings, I think, all the threads of this together. I'm going to read it to you. I wonder whether you're working out where I'm going with my final quote today. But it is this, from the second book of Chronicles, chapter 7, verse 14. And listen to this. If my people, who are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and I will heal their land. People, this is a Yom Kippur verse. If today we will humble ourselves, not just afflict our souls in that way generically with the list of five things and we've done the five or not done them and therefore we've done the affliction. This is way deeper than that. We have to humble ourselves before God today. Not just do a tick list. We have to humble ourselves before God. Pray, seek his face, and turn from your wicked ways. And God says, if you do this, I will hear, I will forgive you, and I will heal the land. And boy, does the land need healing today. We need to turn back to God and humble ourselves, afflict ourselves in this way. We need to humble ourselves. You know, the humbling is something that we do. When we realize before whom we stand, we are humbled. Should not wait for him to force us to be humbled in that way. The humbling is something we choose. In the paraphrase of what Yeshayahu was saying earlier in the passage that what was read there, what does God want? The fasting. What fasting is it that he seeks today? What he wants today, what he surely wants today, is not just a fast because we stop eating for a day, but what he's seeking is a humbling of ourselves before him to seek his face. However we do that. And it may be the reason that the Torah is quiet on this is because he wants you to humble yourself in the way that makes sense to you. That you bring yourself low before God and recognize your hopeless position. And whatever you do today, to actually get to that point of conclusion where you know it is hopeless before God unless he provides a way and a sacrifice, I am lost. Humble yourself before him and seek his face. And in all this, we must never forget that the key point today is Yom Kippurim, not the day of sin. Today is the day of atonement. And we need to celebrate that. Recognize that. Enjoy it. Embrace it. Grab it and hold it close. For our God has made a way. And we should rejoice and be glad in that. The blood shed of Yeshua facilitates our salvation, as it is truly the equivalent of our own death. It's as if we died when Yeshua died. So let's be filled with that joy. Let us have that sadness and solemnity in the recognition that we caused Yeshua's death in the first place, and we did. But don't let that push the joy away from what should be our joy today, on this day, Yom Kippurim.